through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
All right, you guys, welcome in. It's Jake and Stacy. Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross here. We had breaking news yesterday on the arrest of Richard Sherman. When Jake and I were reporting a lot of this, we had very limited information. So because we only had that information to share, I don't want any misinformation to get out. So I just want to clarify two bits of things that Jake and I reported yesterday. The only thing we knew at the time was that Richard Sherman was arrested under burglary domestic violence. That's a big word. So we didn't know what that meant. And it has since been clarified since the close of our show that no one sustained injuries and Sherman did not gain entry into a home. And it was clarified as burglary domestic violence because he knew the occupants of the home he was trying to get into. So again, no one sustained injuries. And then as is standard with DV charges, Sherman being held without bail until he meets. So that's why he's being held without bail.
That's huge because obviously when you first see that headline or you first see that charge, domestic, you know,
yeah,
violence,
I was like, that's a big...
It is a big one. And you automatically assume the worst, right? I mean, it's just human nature. You're like, oh my gosh, that's awful. And anybody that I talked to yesterday that was reaching out to me, that was their thought. Like, oh my gosh.
Right, what happened?
You know, what happened? Who got harmed? All these things. So really glad that we were able to find that particular part out of the story.
Yeah. So just again, want to clarify that no one sustained injuries, even though there was that big word used yesterday and we didn't know what it meant on our show. So just wanted to clarify that. One other thing, there was a 911 call. Jake and I are not going to play it. If you want to find it, you can. I'll warn you that it's very difficult to listen to. I personally am not going to listen to it again. And again, we're not going to play it on our show. In the 911 call, the caller, presumably his wife, mentions that Sherman has been struggling with suicidal thoughts, or the word just suicidal is mentioned in the call. So the reason I mention that is not to necessarily speculate about what's going on with Sherman, but the conversation, just to kind of break the fourth wall a little bit, the conversation it led the three of us to have, Jake, Curtis, and myself, was twofold. One, conversations about mental health in general, which don't get discussed enough, particularly on sports radio, even though mental health is a huge, I don't want to say issue, but a huge, something that should be a conversation within the sports world for athletes, for people covering sports, whatever. And then the second conversation we were having was one that we were having a hard time figuring out, which is how to cover something like this. How do you cover something that is so deeply personal when it's a public figure, a public figure that is a Seattle sports icon, but also someone dealing with something so deeply personal that you, as a reporter, as a journalist, as a radio host, what have you, need to question, okay, what do I cover and what do I not cover? What does more harm than good? How do I talk about it? How do I talk about important things and important conversations this brings up for me, like mental health or interactions between police and other people? And then how do I have those conversations in a way where I'm not hurting his family or hurting him, but then doing justice to the story? It's been a very hard line to
draw. It's been a unique process for sure. I mean, that's, you know, we have had all these discussions, and here's the thing, like Richard Sherman to me is somebody that I know personally, right? Was teammates with him, have been have interacted with him, have worked out with him in the off season. He's somebody that even when he was a 49er that I still called and texted and talked to about numerous different things along the way. And so, you know, it's hard to cover something like this. It's hard to talk about it because where my thought goes is I immediately think of Sherman. I immediately think of his family. I immediately think of his wife and his kids and everything that he's going through and how his actions have affected his family. And one of the things that I am grateful for is that today we can look at everything that has happened and say that nobody else was harmed because of his actions.
Yeah.
This could be an entirely different story today. The decisions that he made to drive under the influence, and it sounds like pretty severely from what we heard in the 911 call, and the decisions that he made that night could have been catastrophic. It could have caused harm to either his family, could have caused harm to somebody else, a bystander. There was a construction worker that was close by that witnessed the crash, the collision in the barrier. I mean, what if that had led to an injury of somebody else? We'd be talking about this completely differently. But fortunately, that's not the case. And it's hard because you look at these situations, you talk about mental health, you talk about all these things, and I see somebody that obviously is struggling with their own situation, not being employed in the NFL at the current moment in time after being a high level athlete for a number of years who has been entrenched in this community. And there's just all sorts of evidence out there that leads us to believe that this wasn't just one incident. We've all had maybe a friend here or there that, you know, maybe went drinking one night and made a really, really, really poor, stupid decision and ends up getting a DUI or gets in trouble of some sort. And that's not indicative of their character or indicative of the situation that they're currently dealing with personally. But for Richard Sherman, there were things that were going on in his life that he was struggling with in this offseason. And this was more of the culmination of, everything that he was dealing with. And here in cut number 16, guys, Ian Rappaport alludes to that fact with some of the close friends that he reached out to and talked to of Richard Sherman's.
One other thing I want to mention, there was a somewhat disturbing 911 call where Richard Sherman and his wife allude to some of the personal troubles that he is currently going through. My understanding is his close friends have been well aware of this and actually visited Sherman's house on a couple of different occasions this offseason to try to intervene and help Richard Sherman deal with what he's dealing with personally. Obviously, the culmination of this was this incident that we are hearing about now.
And so you hear that and your heart breaks. Your heart breaks because he's had people that's reached out to him. He's had these moments and these signs that there's something more going on here with Sherm and the struggles that he's dealing with in his own personal life. And so, as I said before, I'm just very grateful that this is not something, this is a big deal. And I don't want to minimize this. And I don't want to minimize it by saying maybe this is the wake-up call that Sherman needed to turn his life around and to see that what he was doing and how he was going about things in his personal life was starting to affect everybody around him, because what he did was serious. The alleged crimes that he has committed are serious, and that he is going to have to face the punishment for those crimes, those actions, those decisions that he made. But man, I am just incredibly grateful that no one was hurt throughout this process. Because as of yesterday, we had no idea, and it was very concerning.
I'm also grateful, and I'm not making excuses for anyone, that Sherman wasn't hurt, because it's made clear at some point that one of the officers clearly knows that this is Richard Sherman, and he talks about how, oh, I was a valet when I was a teen and I parked your car once. What if Richard Sherman's just a regular dude? Like, this could have been something that, God forbid, ends in a fatality or ends in serious injury, which shouldn't be the outcome for something like this. Under no circumstances should a call like this end with someone being killed by police. So I'm glad that this ended with also Sherman being safe. And that was clearly something to me that it sounded like his wife was concerned about, making it clear that, like, please do not, right? He's unarmed. Like, making it clear that, like, this could, you're trying to ask for help from police, but you also know that there's an inherent risk.
Well, and when someone's volatile like that, right? Because she knows that he's not going to go down easy. He's not going to be in the state that he's in. he is aggravated. He is, and it ended up turning out to be that way. That initially, you know, the conversation with police was okay, and then when they told him that they were going to have to place him under arrest, he resisted, and so there is all that, and so I think that that's a very difficult thing to reach out for as well if you're his wife, like I said, I'm just very grateful that this ended in a way where today we can talk about, you know, hey, Richard Sherman's going to have to answer for the decisions that he made, but that it's not something that has affected anybody else in any serious any physical harm, because it easily could have been. And I just really hope for him and his family that things get resolved, and really, really praying for particularly his family.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And again, I'm trying to figure out how to, just to be blunt with you guys, how to cover the story without bringing too much spotlight on his family, on either Ashley, certainly not his children. But I'm trying to figure out a way to cover a story about a public figure without doing damage. And so just, I feel like at times our show is going to sound disjointed when we talk about this. It's because Jake and I are trying to find a way to do it respectfully. So, but we're also trying to give you any information you need to know. And obviously, I think Jake and I are going to have bigger conversations. There's one that we're going to talk about later today that was really important to me. And Jake, I'm glad that you felt comfortable and feel comfortable opening up about it when we talk about mental health and athletes. And so I'm just going to put a stopper in this conversation right now, but we'll get back to it. So right now it is 11:13. That means it's time for headlines.
Extra, extra, read all about it.
Headline Rewrite.
Presented by Tila Mortgage.
The real story behind the headlines in today's news with Jake and Stacy.
Headline number one, Mariners general manager Jerry DePoto confirmed to 710 ESPN Seattle this morning that the team will recall Jared Kelnick tomorrow. What is the real headline?
Headline Rewrite. Apparently you can get a chance, a second chance at a first impression. Nailed that one. Curtis, I nailed it.
Perfect.
No, I mean, it's great. Jared Kelnick obviously had a struggling stint to start out with his major league debut. He's performed much better since being sent down, and that's going to happen. There's a gulf between what you can do in the minors and the biggest jump, and Andy McKay told us that, director of player development with the Mariners. He said the biggest jump you can possibly make is from AAA to the majors. That's the biggest jump, and I think Jared Kelnick found that out, and other prospects will find that out too. Hopefully the second chance is much more successful.
Well, and as he went down, there were things that he needed to work on, right? And so Jerry DePoto says that he checked off the boxes in terms of what he felt Jared Kelnick needed to work on. The hard part in this situation is there is no simple path. Like I was talking about the recruiting process yesterday. There's no manual. There's no manual to know exactly the amount of time that they need. Have they truly figured things out? Overall, I just think that when you look at Jared Kelnick, this is something that gives me great anxiety because he means so much to this Mariners rebuilding process, and I want to see progress. I want to be in a position, guys, where I don't have to look and defend Jared Kelnick and say, yeah, I know he struck out, or I know that he got out on that play, but man, Curtis, was that plate appearance, was that a savvy plate appearance? It was a really good... The savviest plate appearance I'd ever seen. Strikeout? That's a good-looking strikeout right there. I want to see actual results from Jared Kelnick. That doesn't mean I expect him to be an all-star. Doesn't mean I expect him to bat over 300. But I want to see that improvement from him in the second half of the season because this Mariners team is playing well, and I want to see him add to it, not subtract.
Never seen a more impressive 8-for-83 performance.
Never. Ever.
Woo!
Headline Rewrites.
This news just breaking about 10 minutes ago. Jeff Passan of ESPN reporting that Major League Baseball has upheld Hector Santiago's 10-game suspension for violating, in air quotes, the league's foreign substances policy. What is the real headline?
MLB has decided to lay down the law with pitchers like Gerrit Cole by suspending Hector Santiago. Sticking it to him. Stick it to Gerrit Cole.
It's true, though.
You want this to happen to you, Gerrit? You want this to happen to you?
shaking in his boots.
Hector's like, what did I do?
I mean, the thing that's been so incredible about this is that Major League Baseball has just made a mockery of themselves. Every step of the way, they've just fallen all over themselves with this situation, not enforcing it to begin with at the start of the season, then having to go through the charade of enforcing it heavily during the middle of the season, and now sweat and rosin apparently is a banned foreign substance that is very easy to mix, almost near impossible, especially when you're in hot weather and you're putting the rosin bag out there for everybody else to use. So this is ridiculous. I think Hector Santiago has handled this extremely well. The Mariners have handled this extremely well. But as I said before, this couldn't have been a more perfect organization to have this happen to, because you're just going to have passive-aggressive fans that say, oh, Major League Baseball, I'm mad at you, but I'm not really going to cause an uproar about this. And Santiago, I just love the approach that he's had, tossing the rosin bag, you know, basically off the pitcher's mound just to make a point how stupid this whole thing is. It's ridiculous.
Headline rewrite.
Headline number three, Russell Wilson appeared on the Dan Patrick Show yesterday and said his relationship with Pete Carroll has never been better. What's the real headline?
Real headline, well, headline rewrite is Russell Wilson adds, as long as we keep winning. And I still think that's it. Look, now, Jake, before you say anything, I genuinely believe in this moment that Russell Wilson and Pete Carroll have had an important conversation, have moved this relationship forward, and have found a way to heal from it, for lack of a better word. I also feel like Russell Wilson mentioning the importance of winning also makes it clear that, like, there's a bar for me working with you guys moving forward. I want to win, and if I can't do that here, I'll do it elsewhere. Mm-hmm. I'll add, I don't really blame anyone for doing that. If you were at a job that didn't make you happy, or at a job where you felt like you were trying to make something work and people weren't giving what you were giving, you'd want to leave that job too. I know that you love your team, but this is a career for Russell Wilson. So on the one hand, I think what he also means is, as long as we keep winning and we keep trying to win, I'm staying. And I don't really blame him for that, though.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
That's the caveat to this that is hard to separate. Trying, what is that definition? Because the Seattle Seahawks are trying. John Schneider, Pete Carroll are trying. They expend every resource that they can to try to win. Now, is it in alignment with your star quarterback? Is it, are you guys on the same page as to what that looks like, how that goes about? And then when it comes to the season, it comes to game day, it comes to the adjustments that you make in a given season, are you guys on the same page moving forward, stepping forward in the right direction, or do you feel like you're staying stagnant or even going backwards? I think that is the biggest problem in this situation. The try, yeah, off-season moves, obviously that was something that was addressed, but I think that that is a very gray area that people, when they hear that, they're like, well, what are you talking about? But in season, the adjustments, the schematics, the overall thought process of how we're going about our business, and are we taking that next step forward? We have talented rosters. We have the ability to get deeper into the playoffs, and we're not. What are we doing to fix that? And I do think 2021 is incredibly important, and I know that there is an incredible sense of urgency from everybody to maximize the roster that they have right now, an incredible sense of urgency.
I guess what it is my headline rewrite would be a cautionary tale of not reading Russell Wilson saying his relationship is with Carroll is better as, I will definitively finish my career in Seattle. Like, and that's not a bad thing. Like, it doesn't make either a bad person. But I don't read it as saying, yep, I'm here forever, signing on the dotted line. I read it as like, all right, we made sure we had the same goals. We have the same goals right now. Let's make sure we carry it out. I would just avoid taking it too far.
Yeah. No, I agree.
And that's not stirring up the Russell Wilson drama.
No,
it's just saying, like, the NFL's a business. What I think Russell Wilson's concerned about is making sure, like, let's make sure we're on the same page about what we want.
For sure. And obviously, this year, I think what happened in the offseason could be a precursor to the following year if things didn't go right. But right now, the positive thing is that they are on the same page, that they are working together, that they are hyper-focused on making 2021 the best season that they can possibly make it for now and the future. So I think that when you talk about it, all parties involved, everybody has accepted their roles and responsibilities in the matter of what happened last year. Now it's about moving forward. Now it's about making those adjustments on everybody's side. Russell Wilson, Pete Carroll, John Schneider, everybody included. Making it all, taking the right steps forward to making the season the best it could possibly be.
All right, we got some big news from General Manager Jerry DePoto this morning on with Paul Gallant. And the biggest story of all is going to be that Jared Kelnick will be joining this team tomorrow when they pick up action after the All-Star break for a series on the road against the Angels. So what are we expecting from Jared Kelnick in his, do I say re-debut? It's not a debut, but his second chance, second shot. Going to be a huge part of this team moving forward. A huge part of their future. We'll ask Mike Salk next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacy,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios,
streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Mariners GM Jerry DePoto joined Danny and Gallant this morning, spoke with Paul Gallant about a couple different things about the Mariners, plenty to be excited about heading out of the All-Star break. Now, maybe the biggest news, we're going to get to the other news in 15 minutes, so don't worry, you're going to hear those cuts, you're going to hear it straight from DePoto's mouth. But the most important news, the one that's making headlines in the baseball world, Jake, is that Jared Kelnick will get another shot, and it's going to happen sooner than you think. In fact, with this first series. So joining us now, Mike Salk, brought to you by Jafco Plumbing and Sewer. Mike, how'd you take the news Kelnick's joining this team after the All-Star break?
Yeah, this was sort of widely speculated over the last couple of days, and nice to see it confirmed by Jerry this morning on the morning show. Yeah, it's good news. I mean, it shows that he's done what they needed him to do down in AAA. And, you know, hopefully he's regained some of the confidence that he's famous for and can come back and be more of the player that we expect him to be. I mean, it's nice that this hopefully won't be a lost year for him. He's shown that he's good enough to destroy AAA pitching and now just come back and do what he's perfectly capable of doing here in the major league. So, he's still young. There's still a tremendous amount of upside. But if he does come up and give them that shot in the arm, I think it's such a great, great indicator of what the future could end up being.
You know, Salk, it's one of those things, as I said to you yesterday, that it gives me great anxiety because how important these guys are. And I was telling Stacy and Curtis, like, what I really want to see Jared Kelnick, I want to see that improvement play out, obviously, in the second half here and not sit here and go, oh, man, you know, I know he's getting out here, Salk, but, man, those are some good plate appearances. You know, he's having some solid at-bats, and even though he's not able to get on base, what are the things that you want to see from him?
Well, you know, when he went back down, I think what we saw was him using the entire field, not just trying to be that typical lefty Deadpool hitter. We saw him really using the entirety of the ballpark, gap to gap, going the other way, driving the ball when he has the opportunity. And I think we're going to want to see some of that from him as well. You know, I think the nice thing is we're not going to have him come back, hopefully, and see him in the leadoff spot again. Want to see him lower in the order. The team is playing better. I think there's a lot less pressure on him now than there was when he first got called up. Remember that timing. You know, their lineup was really struggling to score runs at the time.
Oh, yeah.
They were struggling to hit above 200 at the time. And it almost felt like people thought, okay, well, once Kelnick comes up, that will help the lineup. And, you know, that's a lot of pressure to put on a kid at his age and with as few at-bats, even in the minors as he has. He comes back now to join a lineup that really is playing pretty well. I mean, most nights they're able to put four or five runs up on the board, which has been enough to win. You know, I think that takes so much more pressure off him, and now it's just come up and do what you're capable of doing. So I'm really excited about it. I mean, I'm more excited about him coming up now than I was the first time.
Yeah, this isn't really a question, but I was thinking as you were saying it, it's wild the different state that this team is in with his first debut versus now. Because we were talking about, Jake and I, whether or not it was unfair to put so many of those expectations on Kelnick, whether or not it was unfair to say, here comes a 21-year-old to save your lineup because they'd been like no hit and things weren't working out. And now it feels like you're adding to it, which is kind of how it, I wish it would have felt the first time.
Well, I totally agree with all of that. And some guys, you know, J.P. Crawford's a totally different player right now than he was a few months ago. Jake Fraley has added a tremendous amount of length to this lineup and his ability to take pitches and get on base, right? So you start adding in, you know, you're getting something from the catching position in Torrens. You've added Bowers. France is now back in the lineup and hitting again. So, you know, once you start adding all those guys back in, all of a sudden you can slide Jared Kelnick into the bottom of the order, hit him somewhere between 7th and 9th, and really take a lot of pressure off of him and hopefully give him an opportunity to see more fastballs. And if he does, he should clean a few of them out.
Yeah, he definitely should. And that's the unique aspect of this. And the other player, Salk, that has kind of just been thrown in there just last second because it happened right before the All-Star break was Cal Raleigh. What are you expecting from Cal Raleigh in the second half of the season, and how do you expect them to implement him? As of right now, they have three catchers in their lineup.
Yeah, you know, so I will say I generally have low expectations for catchers who are making their debuts in the big leagues, not just game one, but really even their whole rookie season. I think it's so challenging to try to learn all of everything you've got to do behind the plate, learn the entire pitching staff. And when you're playing for a catcher who's your manager, and that's not atypical in the bigs, they are going to be on you to make sure that the defensive part, pitch calling part of your game is going to be up to snuff, or else the batting doesn't matter. So he's going to have a lot on his plate. Oh, by the way, he's a switch hitter, so he's got to get the righty swing right, the lefty swing right. The upside potential for Cal Raleigh is huge. I mean, thinking about switch hitting catchers like that, Jason Varitek really is the player that comes to mind when I see Cal Raleigh, which would be a heck of a get if he really ends up being the kind of player that Varitek was. But I don't know that I necessarily expect it right away from him. But I'll say this, if you get it and he does come in and contribute right away, you know, you got some options. You know, you may end up looking at Terenz as being a trade chip if there's a team out there that would like him. I think that there's still a lot of upside in his bat and his ability, so that could end up being a trade chip to try to get you a starting pitcher without having to dig too deep into your prospect list. And if both guys end up playing well, you know, I know that Tom Murphy's been a bit of a leader on this team and he's got the crazy eyes, but to me, he's a league average guy. That may be the type of player who ends up getting DFA'd if you really see what you're hoping to from Raleigh.
Hey, we have a couple minutes left here, so I just wanted to switch gears for some Seahawks talk. In a little over an hour, Jake and I are going to be talking about the Seahawks' best and worst moves of the offseason so far. What's your best and worst move? I'm springing it on you. So there's a couple different choices you can have. You don't have to stick to these.
Yeah. You know, right now, I know it sounds, I don't mean to sort of pile on, but the fact that they have not signed Richard Sherman, you know, which was rumored, is looking like it was a good move. And not to bring it back to the story, but it's just, you know, it's all I've been thinking about really for the last 24 hours or so. And so much has come out since we spoke yesterday at 11:30. And I just find myself thinking about how sad the whole thing really is, and seeing a guy in Sherman that maybe nearing the end of his career, maybe doesn't know how to handle it. You know, I think that there's some level of sympathy that comes out of this whole thing for him, a guy that clearly is having problems and doesn't seem to really understand what to do with it. I think one of the challenges I've been having with the whole Sherman thing is that in his past, he's had such a casual relationship with the truth that it's really difficult to determine where he's at any given time, if that makes sense. Mm. I mean, this is a guy who went on national television and just outright lied about various stories here in Seattle, ignoring words that were on tape that had come out of his own mouth. So, you know, there's clearly a level of narcissism, clearly a level of egotism that goes with Richard Sherman. Not that any of that is a huge surprise. But when all of a sudden that becomes fractured and you're faced with the possibility of no longer being Richard Sherman, the starting cornerback star in the league, you start to see how people can really spiral. And so, you know, this is very much an NFL story in addition to being a Richard Sherman story of guys that really struggle with that kind of a transition.
Yeah, it is. It is tough. It is. And every player deals with it differently. I think there is somewhat of a mourning process. And when you're somebody like Richard Sherman, who has been an elite alpha leader everywhere he's gone, every step of the way, trying to make it known to everyone who he is and what he's about. It's an incredible challenge when you're not necessarily the guy that the hot commodity on the market that everybody is going after. There's a tough transition. It's incredibly, and you said it, it's incredibly sad to see what's happened.
Well, and I don't mean to excuse him either. I mean, none of that is an excuse for DUI, for threatening people, et cetera. I mean, like, I don't mean to make any excuses for him, But I think you're starting to look at it with a little bit more perspective and trying to determine where he's at and how he seems to be struggling to hang on right now. I'll also say that I know that that can be normal in NFL circles, but I'm somewhat surprised that it is happening to someone like Sherman, because he does seem to have so many other outside interests, right? I understand the guy who's been doing nothing but playing football his entire life, and all of a sudden he doesn't know what else he's going to do in his future. I guess with Sherm, I mean, could he go to the NFLPA? I mean, all of the various possibilities for a really smart guy who's curious like Richard Sherman, I guess I wouldn't have necessarily seen this coming the same way with him.
He's Mike Salk, joins us every weekday at 11:30. Thanks, Mike.
All right, guys. See ya.
All right, the latest from Jerry DePoto. He didn't just comment on Jared Kelnick. He's got plenty else to say, and we'll play that sound for you next. Don't go anywhere.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
This hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. We're taking you around the diamond thanks to Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business. Jared Kelnick returns to the Mariners lineup tomorrow on the road against the Angels. First pitch will be at 6:38 p.m. Pre-game show starts at 5:30 p.m. right here on 710 ESPN Seattle. And that's Around the Diamond, brought to you by Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business. I am so glad that baseball's back. I know everyone needs a break over All-Star Weekend. Love it. Respect that. Love that for you. I have been so ready for just sports of, I mean, not sports of any kind. There's plenty of stuff going on, but specifically with the Mariners to come back, because suddenly I'm sucked in again. You did it again, Mariners.
You got me.
Please don't hurt me.
I've opened my heart to you.
Oh, no, I regret it. It's too late. I made myself vulnerable with the Mariners.
How can you not, though? This team
me.
Is fun, man.
I know.
It is fun.
Look,
and everything that they've overcome, 53 different players have been on this roster.
Unreal.
53.
That's unreal.
And they are how many games above 500?
We don't
Six
talk about
games?
Scott 500? Service enough.
I mean, no, we don't. The job that he has done has been absolutely incredible. This team is gritty. This team is fun. This team is young, and they are building their culture together. And you just keep adding pieces to the puzzle together, and hopefully as you go through this process of wanting to win and develop at the same time, that it all kind of comes together hand in hand.
Now, I want you and Curtis to answer this question. Honestly, Curtis, I'm sorry for asking it when you had food in your mouth.
I know. Took a big old bite.
So sorry about that. Does adding Jared Kelnick, or would adding Jared Kelnick objectively make this team more fun?
Yeah.
Well, then do I have news for you. His general manager, Jerry DePoto, joined the Danny and Gallant show this morning, and he said, cut number 7, Kelnick is coming back.
He will, and he will play center field more nights than not. So, you know, he'll still, like he's done in the minors, he'll move from side to side. You know, as we know and we've seen, Jake plays all three, Jared plays all three. That does give us some flexibility. And there are going to be nights where we want to maintain, you know, some flexibility to give Mitch a DH day, to let Shed get in there in left field. And, you know, so we're going to be creative in how we do it. But, you know, we want Jared to get his reps, like we want Jake and Mitch to get their reps. And we got to find ways to keep getting Shed and Dylan Moore their ABs. And we're going to be very creative in how we manage the roster coming out of the break.
Now, Jerry, in cut number 6, why did you make this decision right now?
I mean, we've always believed in his talent, and obviously the 25 or 26 game stretch, whatever it was that he last experienced, didn't go the way we'd hoped, or he would have hoped. But you know, we sent him back. He had a plan to work on. Some of it was, you know, how to approach the game. Some of it was, you know, more skills development based. And he did everything we asked him to do, and the performance was excellent. He achieved what we were hoping he would achieve in a short time, and we told him that we would reassess at the All-Star break and see where we were. And you know, we think it's the right time to give it another shot.
Now, Kelnick obviously struggled in his first stint. I think his average was below 100 by the time
he was
sent down. It was not so great. Since being demoted, he's hitting above 300 with 7 home runs in the better part of a month. So, I mean, he's seen a lot of improvement there. Obviously, we know that there's a gulf between going from the minors to the majors. But, I mean, you got to give him another bite at the apple, and now's as good a time as any.
Well, it is, and this is the time that, honestly, they deemed. I mean, this was the plan all along, and they were hopeful that Jared Kelnick could keep them on the timeline that they wanted. Jerry, I think, you know, if you read between the tea leaves of the conversations that they have had and the thought process that he and his group has had since the demotion of Jared Kelnick, was that they were always going to bring him back after the All-Star break if he was able to make those adjustments, which they were confident that he could. And he has at this point. I'm going to be excited to watch him in center field and see how he plays there. I think that this is a great opportunity to really get a sense of who he is and making those adjustments, going through failure, going through adversity. All right, if you feel like this kid is as close to a sure thing as possible, doesn't mean that he's going to come back, he's going to hit 300, but we should see a remarkable improvement in terms of the way that he's played. And guys, we've seen two ends of the coin on this in regards to just this season alone, on players getting demoted, players going down, and then they come back up, and whether they had a positive or negative turnaround again, right? So Luis Torrens, he goes down. He didn't really spend a whole lot of time down at AAA. I mean, what was it, a week and a half? I mean,
it wasn't very long.
It wasn't long. And he went down. He made some adjustments. He's come back. I mean, he's hitting like, what is it, 280 since he's been back with the club.
He's hit like 9 home runs since coming back.
Right. Dude. His OPS is insane at T-Mobile Park at this point in time. I mean, you just look at what Luis Torrens has done. It's been extremely positive. Taylor Trammell, his has continued to be a negative, where he's had moments where he's flashed and he's given us fun moments, but overall at the plate that he has struggled, even when he was tearing it up down in AAA Tacoma. So it's really hard to know and to determine, okay, here's the exact path, here's the exact way to know that he, you know, that they are ready, that he's improved his game, his approach at the plate is better. It's the appropriate time to send him up, but they're giving him this second opportunity, and we'll see if Kelnick can make the most of it and improve, because it's vital to this rebuilding process.
Kelnick isn't the only Mariners top five prospect. You've also got Julio Rodriguez. Julio was recently promoted to AA Arkansas, and I don't think any of the three of us are expecting him to debut this year, though DePoto hasn't ruled it out. None of us are truly expecting that to happen. But is his future in the bigs closer than we think? Cut number 8, here's what DePoto had to say.
Ball that he hit to right field yesterday for a grand slam in Northwest Arkansas was just disintegrated. And it's so much fun to watch him play. I think he's doing exactly what we would have hoped to do in challenging him with the promotion to AA. He's probably going to leave us shortly for a bit to go help the Dominican Republic in the Olympics. But, you know, it's been a phenomenal year for Julio on every level. And, you know, the progress that he's making, it's making the future look much closer than we could have imagined so in July of 2021.
Now, I wonder what that means as far as his debut. Again, still don't think it's going to be this season. That just seems like expedited 0 to 100 type of acceleration. And when Andy McKay, I'm thinking of, spoke to us about Julio, one of the things he said, Jake, was, look, we wanted to promote Julio, and it was something we all agreed was right, because he was so obviously the best player in Everett. He was obviously the best player on the field, and we weren't seeing the deficiencies, which he's going to have. He's a young player. He's going to have those deficiencies. And so we needed to move him up a level so that those deficiencies would become clearer. And mm-hmm. I think that you're still going to see those. So they're going to need to get those deficiencies ironed out before he even touches AAA, much less is promoted to the bigs.
Yeah, it's an important factor in all this, right? So I kind of roll my eyes when I hear stuff like that from Jerry, because look, are we going to be seeing Julio Rodriguez at the end of the year this year? I mean, Curtis, do you anticipate that he's going to be up here in August?
I don't think that's a possibility.
Yeah, so, I mean, so for me, what does that mean? Does that mean that, okay, Julio Rodriguez has a good chance of being up with the club in the second half of the season next year in 2022? That he starts the same way that Kelnick did to start the 2022 season?
Yes, I think it's more hinting he could be up before the first half.
Mm. And that to me would be obviously really exciting and really fun, but as we have talked about before, is that the best thing for Julio Rodriguez's development? That has yet to be determined, but I guess what he would have that Jared Kelnick never did is a full year of minor league play before he got his chance to come up to the big league level next year. So I think that you're looking at this guy, and if he continues to keep playing at a high level at AA, they've shown with Jared Kelnick that they're willing to give guys opportunities if they feel like they're special.
Coming up in the timeline at 12:30, apparently we've been pronouncing the last name wrong for all these years of a huge NFL superstar. I am shocked. And that's all I have to say about that. That's coming up at 12:30 in the timeline, but we're jumping back into the Seahawks offseason. All the latest news you need to know about, it's coming your way next.